Nice to hear Steve Forbert. Steve will be playing at Club Helsinki in Hudson, New York tonight at 8. That's from his accompanying album, The Magic Tree. It's from the it's accompanying the new memoir, Big City Cat, My Life in Folk Rock. Steve Forbert, Club Helsinki tonight. Always nice to hear him. People are filing in, and this is the way the roundtable operates. It's a cool thing. It's kind of a relaxed discussion of news and things until it gets very tense. And it'll get tense soon because Alan Shartok is in the room. Alan, welcome back to the show.
Well, I've been on the show.
I know, but it's nice to see
welcome
you.
Welcome in the room.
It's nice to see you again. That's You're looking well.
Fine. I see my reflection in your head.
That's funny. Okay. investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is here. Good morning.
I'm not answering that after the last exchange.
Thank you very much. We've only just begun. Siena College professor of comparative politics, Vera Curious Kelly's here. Good morning.
Good morning.
How is the summer treating you?
So far, so good.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, great to have you here.
It's the best name in all of organized radio, Curious Kelly. I mean, there's such a great juxtaposition, you know, between the syllables and all and the
yeah,
consonants.
It's a very difficult name, and I'm the only one, so people always find me if they need to. I can't hide.
Terry Gibson also here today, SUNY New Paltz communications professor, former New York State senator. How is the re-election bid coming along, sir?
not so well.
No?
Not so well.
You haven't decided to do that?
No. I'm pretty content with my current life as a teacher. I really enjoy teaching. So
okay.
Now that's what we're doing. Yeah.
By the premise, by the gag. Good to have you all here. It's the roundtable panel. You can join the discussion by emailing us, panel@wamc.org. Try to keep those letters brief, one to a customer per day. Keep it on topic if you can. We do enjoy 12-page manifestos, just not during the show. Don't include links or attachments. Abbreviations are no-no. Proofread if you could. Email us at panel@wamc.org.
I give fewer instructions for term papers from students.
Well, you know.
Just write what you're thinking.
Well, no, not everybody does it that way.
But, you know, she's right. And Rosemary is usually right. And that's why it's great to have her here. How long are you here, by the way?
Till the end of this month, and then you're free again.
All right,
dear.
Fair enough.
Nah. No, I think he was talking about like in the next 15 minutes or something.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Well, we're just excited she showed up on time. Usually she strolls in a little bit
well,
late.
Well, that's because the media project came first, and she was definitely late for that.
How was the media project today?
Late.
Yeah. You had a robust discussion of things?
Yes.
All right. The House easily killed a maverick Democrats' effort Wednesday to impeach President Trump. The resolution was by Al Green. Not that Al Green. This is a Texas congressman. Democrats leaned against it, interestingly, by a 137-95 vote. It went down to defeat by a 332-95 vote. That's the House's first vote on removing Trump since Democrats took control of the chamber this year. And we know Robert Mueller is scheduled to testify to two House committees next week. I believe, as Rosemary and I have only just begun, they have only just begun.
And Trump, of course, is taking a great pleasure out of this vote and saying it vindicates him completely from having done anything wrong. No, Nancy Pelosi had to round up those stray cats known as Democrats. And the interesting person to watch here was Gerald Nadler, of all people. Now, I grew up on the west side of Manhattan when he was coming up. He's not my age, but I'm pretty up there. I can tell you something about Jerry Nadler. I know the people on the west side, and they would be unforgiving if he wasn't for impeachment. It's a radical crowd. And so he had to get a free pass from the speaker, because otherwise he wasn't going to be there. So he was, as we say, off the hook by the speaker, and who understood he had a political dilemma.
And I think that dilemma, Nancy Pelosi looked a tad uncomfortable in dealing with this dilemma.
Yeah, you got to have some sympathy for her. Trying to manage a group of Democrats that large and that diverse is no easy
Straight
task.
Cats.
No easy task. And I do think there's a division there that's going to remain. That division isn't going to go away. It's going to go all the way through the next election cycle. And it's really sort of just a natural order of things. There's too much inequality and too much poverty and just too much suffering in this country for Democrats to just come together as one cohesive group, because people want to try to solve these problems and they're not getting solved.
Well, it's easy for you to say, but the other
side... It was easy to say.
Yeah, but the other side of that is that the Republicans don't seem to have that problem. In other words, they're all together. They got four votes on this on a recent very close vote. But no, they stick together. The Democrats don't.
That's always been the case, right?
Yeah, right, but that's
and also
easy.
They're so they're not the Republicans are not diverse. They don't have very many women participating. They don't have very many minority voices. They have an ideological sort of anti-position at the moment.
So who are they?
Who are they? I don't know who they are any longer, to be honest, because I used to have a lot of Republican friends that had interesting debates with me. I can't find anyone right now who's in the Republican Party supporting this president and sort of always falling in, you know, falling in line with that man's position and the overarching ideology. I don't know who that party is anymore.
Well, I'm rejecting the idea that Trump has put out, and we seem to be echoing here, that this was a defeat of the idea of impeachment. You had 95 votes for impeachment right now, and the most of the people who voted against it were just saying, let's delay, let's hear Mueller first.
Right,
let's,
absolutely
let's
right.
Do it. It's not like, no, Green, you're wrong. We never want to do this. So I reject that. I think there's actually more unity there than the vote indicates.
Now, you may reject it, Rosemary, but that doesn't really matter because he's saying this is vindication. It's infuriating.
Yeah, he's a spin master, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he's gonna say whatever it is he wants to say, and Republicans are gonna do that, and Democrats are gonna do that. I mean, we live in a campaign cycle now where no matter how you vote, no matter what the reality is, the opposing team is going to craft a message that resonates with their target audience, regardless of the truth.
And it seems like, to be honest, 95% of all people that participate in elections have decided who they're voting for or what party they're voting for. So it seems like this farcical, theatrical performance on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm really not sure, you know, what difference this will make now. I think Democrats need to figure out very clearly issues that are potentially addressing points that are of interest to independents, healthcare related, business and job creation oriented, and basic definitions of human rights and social justice questions. And once they get that message out, I think the rest is theatrical performance.
And yet, Professor, I would say this, and you are a brilliant political scientist, and I know it. And yet, here's the problem. It's only the very few in the middle who count.
There were 39 challengers, that Democrats that won GOP districts,
yes,
in the House, and that's why they have the majority. So you're on to something there.
I do. I think it's so. I think that it's the independent vote that becomes crucial here. Trump knows it. So, for example, in picking on Representative Omar and characterizing her in a particular way, or in AOC and characterizing her in a particular way, they're appealing to people who say, yeah, you know, she shouldn't have said that. She had to apologize for what was perceived as an anti-Semitic remark, but she shouldn't have said that. Now, if you make that argument and you can pull over a few people, remember, this last election was won because of the Electoral College, as you all know, by a few votes. That's all it took. And those few votes are what are up for grabs right now.
So I think we should also look at polling data. I know everybody always says polling data doesn't matter, but it, in essence, we can get an indication. Republicans are underwater in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Iowa. So we see a tendency that the electorate is tiring of the same old messages, of the hostility, of the anger, and I think that's where there's a lot of space to actually reach out to
independents. As I always say, Vera, sorry for stepping on you there, from your mouth to God's ear, I hope that you're right about that. But I have a feeling that, Americans aren't particularly getting tired, and we have a year and a half of messaging to go before this is all over. So there are many political analysts, by the way, many who believe that Trump is in, that he's going to win again.
And also keep in mind, there's the polling that we as citizens see. And then there's the internal polling that the Republican sure. Campaign Committee is doing and sharing with their members. That is being done probably over and over and over again to test out messages.
Sure.
And one of the reasons that many of these individuals are being quiet and not speaking out against the president is because they're receiving polling information that tells them that's what they need to do.
Sure. Send them home. Go back where you came from. They're not saying it over and over again because it doesn't work. They're thinking it does work.
I think Tom Friedman of the New York Times has it right, that all of this doesn't matter. What really counts is getting out the 60% of people who are still opposed to Trump. And if he were in the DNC, we have a terrible DNC, I think, he would be out recruiting people to vote, to sign up people who are not signed up right now to vote, and to make sure that they do that.
Well,
I'm not seeing that among Democrats. Well, we're doing all this stuff about racism and 25 people in a debate go out and register people to vote.
Well, we need a candidate, too. That's the big race that's going on right now. Who is the Democratic candidate that's going to come out and energize and motivate that number of people to get involved?
I mean, the polling indicates that there are plenty of people, if they voted, who would vote for anyone if they were not mm-hmm. Trump. So, again, you need to register voters and make sure that they're motivated to go out and vote on election day.
So why won't they register?
Well, because it's very difficult to. We make it very difficult to register to vote and to vote in
for
this
a reason.
Country. For a reason. For a Republican directed, traditional. Why do we vote on a Tuesday? I keep saying this. That's a work day. Why is it not a Sunday? Why is it one day? Why can't we vote electronically? We do everything else.
So if you raise that in the New York
voter
State.
Voter repression in the, is in New York part State. Of the reason for this. Sorry.
I'm sorry. But if you raise that in New York State. You now have a New York State Senate, which is Democratic. You have an assembly that is Democratic. You have a governor that is Democratic.
Why don't we have early voter registration?
And there are changes. There are changes
coming.
That are coming in and here, already here, because they know that this is the time to do it. And that's going to end up, as you know, we have a gerrymander in New York State that has always allowed the Republicans to maintain their own house. Now it can't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's why what you've said is so important.
You know, recent polling, and I haven't seen today's or yesterday's, but it would seem to indicate that solid majorities of the public oppose impeachment at this time. Vera mentioned messaging by candidates. Are they sending, is the Democratic majority in the House sending the wrong message by focusing on impeachment or impending impeachment or impending investigations rather than some of these things you were talking about?
So you got to hand it to Pelosi, right? Mm-hmm. Pelosi is a genius. She knows, she reads those same polls mm-hmm. you're talking about, and it's not an easy job. She started out people hating her guts, and it turns out that she's been a terrific leader, and leadership sometimes means doing what is unpopular mm-hmm. in the short term.
Yeah, and right now, right now, because we're moving towards summer break and a lot of people are not paying close attention to political developments at the moment, so right now is not a good time. This very moment is not a good time to push for anything related to impeachment. The great hope was, of course, that the Mueller hearings would somehow educate the public into really understanding what the report said in detail. But now that that's been pushed out a little bit, you know, that has also become sort of enmeshed with this sort of notion that it might be a bit late. So I don't know, Terry, you know, we had this conversation a few weeks ago where we thought now was the moment. But to me, that moment has passed.
Yeah, I do think to some degree the moment of impeachment may very well have passed, but it could come up again.
Yeah.
My bigger concern really is I'm just not sure that we can debate whether what Speaker Pelosi is doing is right or wrong, but it's essentially a message of we're not going to do anything right now. And I don't know if that message is really resonating with enough people to matter, especially in the middle of summer. I think also when you combine the fact that Donald Trump is seeming to be a master of just sucking the oxygen out of anybody's message and making everybody look at him, making all media look at him, and then doing a pretty good job of actually framing what he wants the American public to think of as the Democratic Party by taking these four female congressional members and turning them into villains, wrongly, of course, but seeming to really appeal to a large number of people in his base in doing so.
When you say wrongly is an interesting word because if it wins for him, It's not wrongly to him.
No,
that's for sure.
Wrongly, obviously, in my liberal
opinion. What's wrong?
Opinion,
the 25 candidates who are allowing those four congresswomen to take precedent over them. Where are they? Why has it been so easy for Trump to make them the look of the party? None of them are running. Some of them aren't even eligible. So why has he been allowed to do that? And Democrats have to take responsibility for that too.
Well, I agree with you.
But how do you do that?
Mm-hmm. You step up and say, let's stop talking about AOC. She's not even qualified to run right now.
Well, how
talk
you,
about me.
You tell
Here's what I would do.
You tell the press, Rosemary, you of all people, you tell the press, stop talking about them. That's going to do it all right. They take a look at AOC. See, they say, here is somebody who becomes a heroine. Come on.
We're getting lessons every day from Donald Trump and how you take over the press. You create a distraction or a bigger news story. Yesterday, the day that Mueller was supposed to report to Congress and testify, what did we have? We had a major rally that stole all the headlines. It was a fluke that it got pushed off, as you mentioned, Vera. But he was ready for it. And the Democrats are never ready. They see it every day because he plays that game so consistently. Why are they not competing on the same terms?
Well, but at the same time, it's easy to steal the spotlight, A, when you're the president, and B, when you use derogatory terms, when you cross every ethical boundary there possibly is and you have no morals whatsoever, it's pretty easy to steal a spotlight.
Just as easy to steal it when you're combating someone doing all that.
I would like to think it's true, but I think, you know, Democrats tend to not want to go down in the mud that deep if they can avoid it. Because they're afraid it will come back to hurt them in the future. Whereas Republicans, and especially this president, seem to have no trouble just living in the mud every day.
Well, I want to go back to Rosemary and ask her this question. You make a point. I want to know how to do it. In other words, how specifically should the Democrats compete with Trump on this level?
You have 1 minute.
You mean get into the dirt?
Yes.
I don't think they get in the dirt. I think they point out consistently that he is in the dirt. This man who said he was going to clean the swamp is like
deep in the quicksand.
But I mean, we know that.
Yeah.
It happens every day. I read story after story after story about slime, dirt, racism, misogyny.
And he loves it.
And you know what? Nothing changes.
No, Vera, it works for him.
Yes,
he loves
it. It does. It works for him. And how do you respond to that?
Well, let's find out by taking a break. And we'll let Terry Gibson think about this. He was about to speak, but measure your words.
Yes, measure.
And we'll be back here in a moment. You can email us at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. On the other side of the news, we will read some letters and move into a little discussion about the rally yesterday. Rosemary Armeo is here, Terry Gibson, Vera Icarius-Kelly, Alan Chartok as well. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Time to play another exciting edition of Where's Alan? He was here and now he's gone, but I have a feeling he'll be back. He was madly searching for something? Okay.
Yes.
Well, it's the roundtable, and we welcome you all to the program. The panel is in operation right now. Rosemary Armeo is here, Terry Gibson, Vera Icarius-Kelly, and the aforementioned Alan Chartok. Hello, Alan, if you can hear us in the monitor.
Alan is not here, so let's quickly talk about something before he has. That's right. Before he returns.
You know, he heard that, and he's going to be very hurt when he comes in. He's going to be upset.
He will be.
President Trump held a big rally in Greenville, North Carolina yesterday. I don't really know what to say about it. Terry Gibson, I'll leave it to you first.
Well, it's just like a 2016 replay all over again. I mean, the campaign rallies are almost exactly the same as they were back then, except now we have a new message. Instead of lock her up, apparently what they're chanting is send her back. So you can see already that this is going to be the message that he just pounds into the ground over and over and over again from now until the next election. It would seem to me that seems to be working and resonating, and I think we're going to just keep hearing this.
Yeah.
So it's depressing, it's frustrating, and I think back to what we were talking about earlier, it would be great if the Democratic Party could find some way to organize and counter these awful messages with something that makes sense and energizes the American public to say no to Donald Trump.
Well, you're a Democrat. What do you do?
Well, we were talking about this in the break. You know, what we need is we need two things. We need a strong candidate to be our presidential candidate, and we need a strong leader of the Democratic Party. Right now, we don't seem to have either one of those. As I was mentioning before in the break.
So none of those 25 are a strong candidate in Terry Gibson, former New York State Senator.
Well, I mean, I would take any of them, but none of them has really sort of stepped out President Obama did.
How can you do that with 25 people? Did President Obama have to go against 24 other people in the primaries?
No, but I think just because of his character and his personality, there weren't 25 people that came out wanting to compete against him.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true either, because I think now these days, all these candidates are starting to realize we're not. You know, there are a number of candidates who aren't really serious candidates. What they're hoping is to position themselves for future runs or higher levels of recognition or maybe earning some money to give speeches. I think by September, we'll see that field thinning out.
Yes, we will.
Yes. And I think there might be 5 to 8 people left, and then it'll go fairly quickly, don't you think, Terry?
Yes, I do, but it would be just better, I think, if we had that superstar now. But we don't. We're still waiting for them to rise up. And it's obviously going to be one of these 20-something people. Oh. And I would take any of them. But
your
we really
body,
need...
Your body language tells me you wouldn't take
well,
a,
no,
any
I,
of them.
No, I would. But we really need that superstar now that can take the microphone and really steal the spotlight from the Republicans and their candidate, and we're just waiting for that to happen. AOC gets knocked a lot, but, you know, actually she's one of the few Democrats that's managed to actually steal the spotlight away from Republicans
from
time to
time. Well, the reason she manages is because she engages in social media warfare, which is something that maybe her generation will begin to do. But I also am quite reluctant to embrace that strategy, to be honest, because I want to hear more on detailed policy. So I like some of the issues that Elizabeth Warren has begun to discuss. I like Julian Castro's ideas. I mean, I think Kamala Harris has brought out some very interesting debating points. So I do like some more context. You know, AOC is great in terms of sort of crystallizing a quick message, just like Trump has done. But I'm not sure this really, in terms of policies, this advances any of our causes.
Well, she can't run, for one thing.
No,
she's not old enough to run.
She's way too young.
But the other thing is, if you're candidate X out of 25, doesn't it annoy you that, again, you talk about oxygen being sucked out of the room? How do you get traction when AOC is clearly a rising star?
Not only that, AOC is a big problem for the Democratic Party. Because this is plays into Trump's hands, at least he thinks so, and by characterizing that group, the so-called squad, the way that he has, he's identifying the Democratic Party in a way which he thinks, not Alan, but he thinks is advantageous to himself.
Well, actually, I think she opens up space in between both Trump and AOC for any of the candidates to discuss policies in detail. So I don't know that I find it interesting, the ideas. She's right on a lot of the issues she mentions and raises, but she does also open up the space in the middle. It's not really in the middle. I mean, it's
she's the first one who
left.
Has talked really yeah. and made climate a national debate. She reaches out to millennials. She works on social media. All of this is hugely important to a party that, as I keep saying, needs to get out the vote. And real leadership in the Democratic Party would not be talking as we are about how she's a liability and sucking the air out of the room. They would be utilizing her. She ought to be working for whoever the ultimate candidate is. And it is distressing to me that the Democratic Party has not helped to do some of that winnowing. If they are indeed, if these candidates are in there just jockeying for position, why are they running at all? Why couldn't Perez, for example, have talked him into, okay, yeah, you're a good vice presidential candidate, you're on the list, we gotcha. He didn't do that. He made it a free-for-all. That was controlled by the Democratic Party structure. And partly Bernie is to blame for that because he made such an issue of how they handled the last election, like it was prejudice. So we've swung
well,
the other way.
Well, rightfully so to some extent, right?
Well, we can debate that, and we have many times here. But
Democrats,
the result is this time is that the party structure is trying to be more open and inclusive, which Bernie wanted. So the result is this, and that plays into Trump's hand, and the party's not recognizing it.
Well, the Democratic Party hasn't been a finely tuned machine in for a very, very long time. And we've had Al Gore, we had John Kerry, we had Hillary Clinton. I mean, we've had good candidates, and yet we
can't
seem
win.
To get them elected.
Not
right.
good enough.
But you know, it's been more than the candidate. It's been the lack of strong, cohesive leadership within the Democratic Party that understands that you have to get local, that you have to care about every single race in your party, from dog catcher up to state Senate races, up to congressional races, up to president. And the Democratic Party hasn't done that. They've only focused on the top tier races for over and over again. Senate. Where the Republicans have always been out there, at least, you know, in the last few decades, they've paid a lot of attention to local races.
Well, also, they are more alike. I mean, the Democrats are much more disparate than the Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, the level of diversity in ideology, in gender, in racial and ethnic identities. I mean, the Democratic Party is significantly more diverse.
And in money, because money talks in this country.
Yeah.
And this morning we're talking about, well, okay, if everybody voted who was a Democrat, you'd never have a Republican anything in this country. But that isn't the way it goes, because money motivates people to protect what they
have. There's lots of money in the Democratic Party, too. Hillary Clinton collected just as much as Trump did, more, I think, for significant portions of that. It's not money that's the issue. It's organization. It's vision. And that's been lacking. I think, Terry, you said it really right.
Well, you know what, Rosemary? I'll split the difference with you.
Okay.
I think you're right. I think there is a lot of money. But I also think there are an awful lot of people without money in the Democratic Party who are not ready. Registering, who aren't voting. If you could get those people to register and vote, you wouldn't have this.
But
you can get them.
Why are they not doing that?
Well, because
getting out the vote is something both parties have known how to do for decades.
When you're Republicans and you have all that money behind you, and it's very simple. You have to protect what you have. Republicans who control a good deal of the money in this country protect what they have. It's a much bigger incentive than getting stuff done for people who don't have anything. That's the problem. If you could get them, Barack Obama, let's face it, there were a whole bunch of people who were African American who were so energized by that election that they came out and they registered. If you could, and Barack Obama won. If you were able to do that each time, you would be ahead of the game.
One of the other fundamental questions also is in the Democratic Party, and I think this will also affect the Republicans in the near future, is this pressure for a generational shift. Because I think the establishment in both parties has controlled how things are run. And the Democrats are feeling real tension from within to just shift to a younger generation of political leadership and dynamics and approaches in terms of how to address the general public. And I think that creates tensions right now in terms of how to move forward. Mm-hmm. Now, Republicans will face the very similar dynamics and challenges in the very near future, because once Trump is gone, who's next? Who's coming in that party?
Okay, I want to also talk about Obama. Where is Obama? He does not have to support a candidate right now. Why isn't he out getting the vote? Why isn't he out talking about racism? And the Democrats have major charismatic speakers, not people who are running necessarily, but who could be players, and they are all silent right now. Something is definitely wrong as far as organization.
What do you think is motivating that, Rosemary? That's very interesting.
I can tell you why. I wouldn't go out right now as former President Obama. What's the point? You waste all your energy, all your capital right now. You wait till the Democrats have a key leader or a couple of key people, and then you step up.
That worked so well for him with Hillary and not speaking out and talking about Russian interference or anything.
Was the president at the time, though. Different.
No, it's the same. You're talking about presidential political capital, big name capital.
Can I just say, as the host of this show, I have missed seeing Rosemary shake her head disgustedly. It's great. It's great to be back. We have to take a break. It's the Roundtable Panel. Terry Gibson, Rosemary Armeo, Vera Arcarius-Kelly is here, and Alan Sharkey. Tech Talk. You can join us by emailing panel@wamc.org. It's 9:45. We haven't even checked one email, and we'll do that after the break.
I've made my mistakes, it's true. Maybe one and maybe two. Maybe more than quite a few. Need I even say?
It's Steve Forbert, who is playing Club Helsinki tonight, and his new book is his memoir, Big City Cat, My Life in Folk Rock, and that's from the accompanying album, The Magic Tree. It's the Round Table Panel. 9:47 is the time on a Thursday. Ray in for Joe. Alan is here. Terry Gibson, Rosemary Armeo, Vera Icarius Kelly, and boy, holy mackerel, we got a stack of emails.
All right, Raymond, I'll do what you want.
Read them.
Vincent, otherwise known as Vinny, says, comment. Where's the work on infrastructure, lowering drug prices, student debt, and all the other things that sent our representatives to Washington to work on? I'm a progressive, but woe to the parties that neglect results for ordinary Americans. And that's from Vinny. Okay. And Russ says, we've seen this before, from Hoover's campaign against Wobblies to McCarthy's Red Scare, the attempt to de-Americanize people of divergent views. The question is whether we are a country of tolerant discourse or whether the Trump wing tightens the screws. And Alan, a different Alan, says, election. Vera makes good sense on election messaging. Clinton sat on her hands and played the not Trump card and failed. Dems need real solutions, which is why people are paying attention to Warren. She has the answers. Best from Alan. And thank you for those, Raymond.
Thank you.
Appreciate that very much.
Teresa
says, grateful. Rather than denigrate the progressives in the Democratic Party, Alan should be grateful that they are breathing life into an otherwise moribund bunch. They are the ones who will inspire people to get out the vote, not Biden. Okay, Teresa, you make some very good points there. However, I want to say something. It isn't Alan. It's Trump. Trump has decided that the key to his victory are these four women. And he is counting on the fact that he can delegitimize them and raise them the way that he has and have his crowds going crazy with them. That's what this is all about. Let's face it. The House of Representatives did not go Democratic Socialist. The people in the middle of this country are what won the House of Representatives for the Democrats. And he's counting on the fact that when you say Democratic Socialist, when you say some kind of anti-Semitic trope, which at least one of them did, that he's going to count on it and he's going to ride it to victory. That's what this is about. Am I wrong?
You can summarize Trump's entire campaign by saying he's anti-brown people. Along the border, going after
Absolutely.
These four women, it is unbelievable how horrifically boiled down his message is. And his supporters are all of the strong, you know, the ones that go to the rallies, the strong sort of virulent supporters, are all these groups of people that fear changes within society and
Absolutely.
Changes within the country. And he manages to boil it down to such a horrific, deeply racist and misogynist message. And that is something that we have to counter through thoughtful policy and explaining to people that the structure of this country is in deep trouble, that we need to invest in infrastructure, that we need to work on environmental issues, that we need to work on educational issues and healthcare. And so on. Policy responses are essential for Democrats to respond.
Okay. So thank you, Teresa, for that good letter. And Eric says, good morning, panel. Why we should brace ourselves for the ugliest year and a half that we've ever seen to date in the Trump era. And if he doesn't, capital letters, win, it will get even uglier. He's not the lasting problem. His base is. We can't vote them off the island or tell them to go back anywhere. We're all stuck with each other. Happy Thursday. And that's from a very good friend,
that's
Eric.
True.
I like the happy Thursday at the bottom of that.
Yeah.
That was nice.
John says, how to get the spotlight. AOC and Omar do it all the time. Mm. Theatricality, genuine empathy, call for and lead marches and rallies. If Delgado called the president a racist and organized the Woodstock rally and a concert to benefit asylum seekers, he'd be a hero. That's from John. And Freda says, our four congresswomen, I'm wondering why the home states of our four outspoken and congresswomen aren't speaking out publicly. They voted for these individuals, and the president is attempting to take away their voices. Freda from Chatham.
And there was a news program this morning where they went and talked to the constituents of some of the four, and they're wildly supportive of them, which of course is well known. Nancy mm-hmm. Pelosi does not have to worry about any of them being returned to office.
No,
that's not the issue. Mm-hmm.
And
the
let's
issue
remember,
is everybody else.
Rosemary, as always, you're so right. But let's remember that the reason that we have some of these people being elected uh-huh. is because of the gerrymander. In yep. other words, yep. now we take safe. We create as many safe Republican districts in some places and other, and then you say, okay, let's get so many people into the one district which will elect somebody like
right.
this.
Get them out of every other district,
Exactly, or as we say.
But I also think to the writer's point, when you can't access the opinions of those who are in these other states, there's some media issues there too. With is the media just not covering them? I know you mentioned that one story this morning. I heard that story. But why aren't more media outlets going directly to these states and writing stories about these?
Because there are no reporters. Have you been reading about
exactly.
what's happening to the news business?
I, that's my point. My point is that the lack of media, especially small town, newspapers
local,
in these communities,
local
is what's really silencing
and
people.
And that, it's my friends, right. is why Trump is trying to convince us that mm-hmm. the press is the enemy of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though the press is weakened because of lack of finance and the rest of it, we know what Trump wants. He wants no press.
So one thing I can say with certainty, if by fall we have indications for an economic crisis emerging because of global trade disputes, mm-hmm. this president is in trouble.
That's
and
right.
he can use yeah. whatever language along the border and against elected officials who happen to be women and brown-skinned. The economy is where it's
at. Well, but you're not hoping for a downturn, right?
Just to be clear. Who wants to hope for that?
Okay.
Because it's horrific to the struggle that people will face. But I'm just saying that is where the rubber meets the road.
Well, what do you think?
And I'm fearful that there will
be
consequences. It might. I'm sort of surprised we don't already have clear indicators. I think I heard some real estate numbers that were looking kind of, on the upper end. Foreign buyers aren't coming in. So there a lot of international investment doesn't arrive in the United States like it used to. The U.S. dollar is very strong at the moment, so that is a good sign. But if there are some more serious sustained consequences to the economy. And let me point out, I think farmers or corporate farm entities are also beginning to see difficulties and experience challenges. So there are sectors in this country that are facing immediate consequences of these trade wars. And I think if that spreads out further, then this president will have a serious
problem.
And on
the migration issue, the immigration issue, that's interesting, too. In my little town of Great Barrington, 7,000 residents, 35 in the summer, but 7,000 in the winter, there isn't a store without looking for somebody to work there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can't pick the crops, if you can't support the infrastructure of the restaurants, if you can't mm-hmm. do that, sooner or later there's going to be consequences to all of that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Continue?
Oh, please.
Thank you. And Peter says, independence and Allen. Allen is fighting the last war. The election of 2020 will not be won by swinging independence. It will be won by turning out your base, by bringing new voters into your base. Go, Rosemary. That's from Peter from South Hadley. Let me just say, Peter, I think you're right. I don't think you're wrong. But it's also the independence. It's the independence as well as bringing out the base of your party.
Well, it's especially the independence as it applies to the presidential election, which is all
sure.
about the Electoral College. I think outside of that, where you don't have the Electoral College in play, the base of the Democratic Party is much more vital.
Yeah. So it's not one or the other.
No,
it's
I don't
both.
Think so. No, it's definitely.
Michael says, primary opponent? Is there anyone thinking about opposing Trump in the primaries? Well, we have a couple, but they're not making the imprint.
I mean, Sanford just was explaining. I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious?
Rosemary, why that reaction?
Oh, he's such a clown.
Well, I watched him being interviewed on, I believe, on CNN, they asked him. So what about your what about your marital infidelities? He said, well, of course they're going to pick on that. You know, I mean,
it's just
unbelievable.
What do you think of the statement? You think this is racist? I think it's weird. Well, Chris Cuomo goes, that's not the same. Weird is not racist. Is it racist? He goes, it's weird. And he just was so inarticulate on such the major point he was being interviewed about. No, he's awful.
Nah, he's
but so is the president. He's inarticulate and awful.
Well,
so,
you know, I can't argue with that.
I mean, which one would you rather have?
Well,
I mean,
not you one. Rather what have.
Republican
not you
would
rather
I
have.
I'm like Jeb right. Bush. Yeah. Jeb, yeah. I want experience. I want articulate, kind, thoughtful people. Is that so much to ask of Republicans?
Apparently. Did you just call Bush kind?
Jeb Bush has a very decent immigration policy.
Yes, he does.
And he has a daughter who had a drug problem. I disagree with him on a lot of things, but he was a very good politician.
So maybe somebody like that would actually get some traction because he would sound thoughtful in contrast to this. No, you don't think so.
Well, there's
like
a reason why he never made it, very far in the primaries.
Well, he's very low energy.
thoughtful was not the ticket.
And we had been bushed out.
Screaming and yelling does it.
All right, and that apparently works on this program as well. Yes. Alan, one more letter and then we'll take a break.
Okay. Okay. So now, one more letter.
Yes.
You said.
Right.
William, the hit squad. The squad doesn't just criticize this country. They have contempt for it. They compare ICE agents to Nazis and our border detention centers to concentration camps. They proclaim the U.S. is systematically racist when Ilhan Omar's own story proves it's the opposite. Trump's tweets put the spotlight on Nancy Pelosi's biggest headache. William.
All right. We have 10 seconds for one of you to respond to that, and then we will take a break for news. Who wants it? Hearing nothing, we'll take a break. This is the Roundtable Panel. Alan Shartok is here. Terry Gibson, Rosemary Arbeo, Vera Acarius-Kelly. You can join us with panel at WAMC.org. Stop throwing papers at me.
I'm so sorry.
Cut
Ray.
It out.
I see it in your head.
I can see that nothing has changed. Rosemary is shaking her head smugly. You're throwing papers. I've had enough. We're taking a news break now. Hey, welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 10:05 is the time. It's a Thursday. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. What a fun time we're having. Terry Gibson is here, Rosemary Arbeo, Vera Acarius-Kelly, Alan Shartok. And the panel is now we're in the lower third of the panel.
Lower third.
The back 40.
Lower third.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I like the back 40.
The back 40?
To the lower third.
Or the back nine,
it sounds
right?
Like an insult to be on the lower third.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I was kind of concerned about
really
that.
Really lost it. Rein it back in.
Okay. Roger that.
That's big, that. Come
big
on.
10-4.
We can't
Come
rely on
Ray
hey. For that.
You know what? You're all fired. Let's read the letters.
Okay.
Oh, no,
Paul
like
says,
Trump.
How to fight. The Dems have two choices. Play nice and fight defensively, ethically in the sandbox while Trump slings mud or, capital letters, get down in the mud and dirty up Trump with a singular message that calls out his Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham's bigotry, misogyny, and ineptness in specific terms. I vote for the latter. I'm surprised by that. Time to stop playing nice. Policy is great and necessary, but will not win this thing by itself. Paul from Leverett.
How about a dual strategy? We need some mudslingers and we need some policy people. And we just need to figure out who does what and who's good at each of these kinds of jobs.
So who do you see on the contemporary Democratic front who's a good mudslinger?
Well,
Biden. He's consistently gone after Trump. I think that's one service he's done.
But there will be people who write to you right now, Rosemary, who say yes, but he's maybe going after him, but in a very molto sotto voice as opposed to really histrionics.
Oh, that's because he's been attacked by the other candidates. But, I mean, I'm not convinced. I'll vote for anyone who's not Trump, but I'm not convinced he's the candidate. But I think he served a really important role in candidate as going after Trump directly.
But you make a point.
That saved all the other ones from doing it. They can look like policy wonks and they care about, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's attacking the bad guy.
But you make a point because all the polls consistently show Biden maintaining that lead.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not even the point I was making. Vera made a point I was trying to back up, that you figure out who can do what and you deploy them. And mm-hmm. I think that is a role for Biden.
Well, mm-hmm. but he is not what I'd call a vigorous, and I'm a big Biden fan, but he's not what I would call a vigorous voice out there. Bernie may be a vigorous voice. Elizabeth Warren may be a vigorous voice, right?
Well, I don't know if Bernie's really into the mudslinging category so much. I would think maybe a Cory Booker might be a better mudslinger if Biden wasn't around.
Yeah.
I think Elizabeth Warren is doing a pretty good job of talking to policy. I'm not sure how many people are listening, how much it's resonating, but I think she's very good at that.
So one of the interesting ideas I was thinking about is that you need perhaps a presidential front runner who talks policy and a VP. Veep candidate who's the
gunslinger.
Well,
that could
as
be
in,
a good
as
combination.
In Richard Nixon. That's what he did. That was his
that's
job.
That's what he did, right? Yeah.
That's who he was. Okay. And Mary says, Rosemary is right. The DNC is useless. It is time for every state and town committee across this country to start getting out the vote. Trump has a real chance of winning this election. He can only be stopped if we can get out every single Democratic voter, and that's from Mary.
You know, one of the things I wanted to point out there in that letter reminds me is that one of the big differences between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is that within the Democratic Party, because of the lack of leadership, we have all of these now well-organized, small grassroots organizations popping up all over the country, even here in New York, and they've done an amazing job of actually registering new voters and getting the vote out and helping win local elections. And I think that's an amazing thing. And that doesn't really exist in the Republican Party. But at the same time, that explains much of the division and that the Democratic Party has ended up leaving it to small individual groups to do the work for them. And they're doing a very good job of it.
Is that true? I don't know. I'm asking. I'm not countering. In 2000, when it got down to Gore and Bush, Jeb Bush in Florida went street to street. I mean, there was an organization there, and it's exactly what you're describing. And is that really true that the Republicans have lost that? How have they gained all the legislatures that they have run, all the local races, without that kind of grassroots
structure?
Project
Red Map, where they literally went and invested millions and millions of dollars in local races to win control of state legislatures so they could gerrymander all of the lines.
Which they did.
Well,
That's how they did it.
But still, now they've done it, okay? So they own these legislatures?
Absolutely.
Doesn't that give you reach into local communities Democrats don't have?
Yeah, but they don't have the type of small grassroots organizational structures that the Democrats now have after President Trump was elected, especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think back the Jeb Bush time was a different time. That was sort of the last of the old school.
It's 2000, I understand.
Seems
whatever,
like a long time ago.
Whatever is
it?
Left of the old school Republican Party, that was pretty much the end of it, I think.
Interesting.
Amanda says, Trump tactics. If the armchair diagnosis of Trump's narcissistic personality disorder that has been put forth by so many psychologists and media reports is to be believed, the one way to look at his political tactic is that he is engaging in classic narcissistic splitting behavior. People who suffer from personality disorders often will attempt to split intact relationships in any way that they can. It is a dysfunctional and immature or underdeveloped way of relating to others and managing conflict. He's trying to manage his conflict with Democrats by splitting the party. He does this with his own party, with our allies, and everywhere he goes. And that's from Amanda from Del Mar.
Amanda from Del Mar, you're so right. Let me just rephrase that in terms of a strategy that the old Romans used, divide and conquer. And he has absolutely figured that one out.
Also, to go to the worst draconian base that he possibly can, the worst part of people's personalities, and to go to that devil, which he does incredibly well. Because remember, not everybody reads political science. Not everybody knows this stuff. So he goes to stuff that just grabs them by the kishkas.
Because he wakes up every day thinking of these things. This is exactly his thoughts. And often I find it so interesting what he's most afraid of, he just says about other people.
Sure.
And
projects.
He projects on other people, and all the thoughts that he has that are so base, he just, it's his thoughts, and apparently they resonate with a lot of people.
I want you to explain Lindsey Graham to me.
Say what?
I want her to explain Lindsey Graham to me.
Yeah.
We're talking about his behavior as mentally ill or psychotic, and it's manipulative. So how do you get someone like Lindsey Graham?
He's like an accordion, he's open 1 minute and closed the next. It all depends on what's good for him.
It's all about survival, or what he thinks is good for him. It's all about
self-interest.
Survival.
I mean, it is just so, the idea of public service is so outdated, apparently, in some political circles. It is just shocking to me that you're not any longer representing the population, the people's needs, larger issues, but you only focus on self-preservation, your own benefit, and you position yourself so that you can make a personal gain after your political career is over. That apparently is where we're at.
Wow. He's also in a very safe seat. When you're in a safe seat, consistency is not really required.
We're hearing from Carol.
Neither is self-preservation, then, either. makes sense, but you just nullified what Vera was saying.
That's true. So I didn't mean to nullify Vera.
Right, you canceled each other out.
Okay. We are hearing from Carol from Warrensburg. The target audience for 2020 is the independents. I forgot the crucial header for this letter. Alan has a point. The target audience for 2020 is the independents and getting them motivated to vote and to vote against Trump. I wish I weren't so pragmatic, because AOC is the future of the Democratic Party. That cohort will have to live with climate change, wars, and the deficit largely run up by the GOP. Obama had to spend highly to clean up after W. And that's from Carol.
Well, talk about deficit. I'm actually quite shocked that we don't talk about that at all. We are going to face our next future generations.
You are right. Oh,
we are going to face such enormous debt that our children will have to pay off. It is just shocking how badly positioned future generations will be in this
country. And you know what? That is such an important point. As Trump raises the national debt again and again, to the point where it's really frightening. And you have, of course, when you raise the debt, you have to raise how much interest you have to raise. And when you have to pay the interest, then you can't pay for other things. But it's as if that doesn't exist in this country. People don't get it.
Oh, and the Republican Party has just gone silent on it. I mean, there was a time where Republicans would resist this.
Yeah. Right. Republicans were about fiscal responsibility.
Yes, right.
And
not to mention Rush Limbaugh, who said, oh, no, that was all baloney. We never really cared about debt.
I guess not, because now we don't have any money for infrastructure issues, research and development. We are now already, you probably all saw the news that we're pre-positioning U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia in case there's a potential conflict.
500
with
Iran. More going today. Yeah.
Exactly. So, we're spending on military. We will be spending on debt, and we have no money on fundamental issues that are going to affect the American public in just a few years. Because we have to pay back all that debt.
So Dan of East Greenbush says, the starting point for Democrats to win in 2020 is to admit that Hillary Clinton was a terrible candidate.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Just stop reading this letter. It's old news. Hillary's history.
You want me to finish it? You don't want me
no,
to finish it?
No, I don't want you to finish it. I want to censor that letter.
It was
as cranky as ever. Oh, good for you.
It was almost an impossible task to lose to Donald Trump, but she was up for it.
With help from Comey and the Russians. Haven't we gone over this?
They also have to ask, can't we do better than a nearly 80-year-old Joe Biden? And that's Dan from East Greenbush.
What do you think about that one, Alan?
As a 78-year-old, I resent it.
There's so many issues we need to focus on. Let's look forward. Let's just think about future generations and the challenges they face in education and student debt and environmental challenges, global warming,
and
debt repayment, military adventurism. Can we just focus on things that really matter?
Well, the question is, do those things that really matter, and you're absolutely right that they do, will they mean enough to the electorate to motivate them to vote?
Yeah, well, it's all about leadership, too. You know, the great presidents of the past were able to focus a country and share a vision and get the majority of the country to follow them in that vision. And we just don't have that leadership right now. Not in the Democratic Party, certainly.
John says the panelists spoke of the economy. If the administration will go out of its way to suppress science, education, and health care, why would it not also FO out of its way to suppress economic indicators that foreshadow that the said administration is in demise? Love you guys. Yay, Rosemary. And that's from John.
Yay, Rosemary.
I know you share that sentiment.
I do.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
No, I do.
You don't believe it? You don't
do.
Believe he loves you?
You're the star of the show. It's good to have
yeah,
you here.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah,
are
yeah.
the star.
Yeah.
But coming back to the writer, there's a good point. We all should be worried about cleansed data that is now, you know,
yeah.
we have linguistic changes happening on government websites where wording is no longer used that we're familiar with now.
And they're
dumping
data outright.
Dumping
Vera, you are right.
data outright. We now have a definition of the middle class that is absolutely hair-raising. I guess when you earn $250,000 a year, that makes you middle class instead of, you know, significantly wealthier than most Americans.
Yes.
I mean, those are the kinds of questions that one wonders about. How can we have reliable data if this government is busying itself?
It's cooking the books.
In terms of misleading the general public on what the indicators are.
Well, Luke says, suggestion for Rosemary's good point. I agree that Democrats can capture news cycles by hammering on corruption. The best place to start is to keep connecting Trump to Epstein. Dems with microphones should make the connection every single day.
Of course, the problem with that is
Bill Clinton.
That would be a problem.
Wait, don't we think that Donald Trump is already connected to so many awful characters, and none of it has seemed to matter?
Exactly. I mean, you have pictures. You have pictures they're playing on CNN all day long of Trump with his arm around Epstein.
Well, there's some interesting stuff coming out today too on the Cohen trial, the Michael Cohen case. The judge is saying
denied the prosecutor's
idea to keep the records under wraps on the campaign finance problems, and we know that Trump was involved in that, so that will be interesting. And Epstein, the decision on whether to keep him in jail or not, let him out on bail, comes out today. And you can bet that decision has to do with whether or not he's going to talk. So the next few days will be interesting. But Trump does have this enormous capacity to get past criticism of his personal business and past lives.
So all
Absolutely
I can
right.
say is he's Mr. Teflon
yes.
when it comes to misogyny, racism, all kinds of horrific affiliations with slimy and criminal element.
As well as misogynist, grabbing women by the you-know-what.
Yes. So here it is. The only thing that will make a difference is if, in fact, we have a change in the economic structures. If there
right.
are... If there's a rise in unemployment, his people will jump ship.
Yeah.
That is where it's at.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Sarah says, racist versus white supremacist. Dear panel, I know this is a long way away, but I look forward to the day when white people will realize that we are all racist because the color of our skin has privileged us and allowed us to benefit from government systems put into place by white people that continue to enslave black people. Whether or not we want to admit it, the power and privilege of our white skin makes us inherently racist. Whether or not we act upon our racist thoughts is the question. Trump acts, capital letters, acts on his racist thoughts in a way that categorizes him as a bold letters, white supremacist. We need to call him what he is. I highly recommend Andre Robert Lee's film, I'm Not a Racist, Am I?, in which he clearly lays out how and why all white people are inherently racist. That's an interesting question.
So let me make a book recommendation right here. There's a fabulous Stanford African-American psychologist by the name of Eberhardt. She wrote a book just came out called Biased, and it looks at how people have everyone has particular biases and how you can actually identify what's happening and how you can train to overcome those biases.
Yes, but inherently, is every white person, and I've been listening to a lot of people on this, inherently racist because of their privilege? That's the question.
Well, I think if you don't realize that you have privilege and you think everybody else has the same opportunities, I think that's kind of the problem. If you have no self-reflection, if you have no idea of the benefit you have from being white.
Well, you know, there is an incredible... Ray, how much time do we have here?
Oh, I'll give you 2.5 minutes.
Okay. There's an incredible fight going on in the Berkshires, which is now filling the letters section to the Berkshire Eagle virtually every day. Allegedly, somebody went to Jacob's Pillow, the great dance festival, sat behind an African-American woman with a bun on her head, and then said something or did something or touched her on the back inappropriately. And so now, did this happen or didn't it happen? The reason I'm raising it with you is you cannot open the Berkshire Eagle without finding 2 or 3 letters every day identifying this alleged thing that happened that is so close to so many people.
So here's the thing. People should have conversations about this topic much more so than they have, and honest conversations, and reflect on their conduct and reflect on their position within society. This is very important. We have had those kinds of conversations around women's rights. We're beginning to have more of those conversations around race. There are so many conversations we need to have in this country that are unresolved.
Let's have the conversations. We're way behind on it, but I think it's all separate from the fact that the man in the White House who has tremendous power over everything is now openly racist. That's
or
different
more
than
racist.
Just not sensing his privilege. That's definitely different.
Well, he's attacking people.
Well, it started with him accusing President Obama of not being born here.
Absolutely.
And everything that's come out of his mouth since that day really has been in that vein of racism.
Yep.
Look at Charlottesville. Look at that.
Horrible.
Yeah, really.
Horrible.
I mean, his reaction to that was nothing short of a white supremacist.
Well, I sense we could go on for another 45 minutes on this, but we will have to leave it there. Terry Gibson, thank you for being here. Rosemary Armeo, Vera Akarios-Kelly, and Alan Chartok, thank you all very much. This is the Roundtable. Thank you all for emailing us this morning. You can stop now. We'll do it again tomorrow at 9 o'clock. If you don't email, in the middle of the night, we probably won't read it. So just wait until
the
show.
I will, though.
You will?
I read them.
Yes, Rosemary not only reads them, she answers
some of them.
All right, well, then forget I said it. It's the Roundtable on WAMC.